Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. This is Bee Buzz episode 16. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. As always, feel free to reach out, Jeff at beekeepingfornewbies.com. All right, everybody. Happy May, May 1st. It's go time now. This is nuke month. This is honey month, swarm month. All great things happen in May. I think Phoebe's birthday is in May. My mom's birthday was in May. My granddad's birthday was in May. A lot of good folks being born. We got Mother's Day right around the corner. So all your husbands and kids out there, get it together. Figure it out. You got about 10, 12 days or so to get it all worked out. So take care of mom. Okay, I did want to start off with some really, really great news. So for any of you who were worried about me and wondering if I was going to be able to pay the mortgage this month, I wanted to let you know that everything is going to be okay. I was not going to bring this up, but I want to be transparent. So it appears as though I did have some distant relatives who've left me a sizable inheritance. I don't have all the details, but that's what the guy, the Nigerian prince guy, told me about in the email. So I'm just in the process of getting my account information and everything over to him and my ID, social security number and everything. But I'm really, really pumped. They're going to deposit that money in my account really soon. Very convenient, so I'm super excited there. So don't worry, everything's okay. All right, so first bit of news. Like I said on the Bee Buzz, we're going to give a little bit of some personal updates. So we'll give a little bit of that, and then we'll kind of dive into some of the Q&A, things we've seen from emails and in the Discord. As you have heard throughout the podcast, and maybe even mentioned in the Discord room, if you've seen the YouTube channel, it's just at Beekeeping for Newbies, N-E-W-B-E-E-S. You may have seen a sawmilling video on there. Well, the sawmill is gone. The idea that I had when I first bought the sawmill was, you know, I had a buddy of mine who's a tree guy. He said he could provide me unlimited trees. I was going to be milling my own beehives and lots of things around the property, around the apiary, building structures and all these things. For a number of reasons, the single biggest one being that I just don't have the time. I'm not down there as much as I'd like to be. I'm not using the sawmill. So I found a really super good guy down in South Carolina. He was really excited about it, and I'm happy for him that we were able to get something worked out and it's a really good fit for him. So there's no more sawmilling to take place. I think what I'm going to end up doing is getting a smaller one maybe in a year or two, something that is fixed and stationary. Mine was a portable sawmill, and I had this vision of using it for honeybee work at the property. And then I might actually go around to different people's places where they said, hey, I've got this old walnut tree that is, you know, we want to take down. Can you take the tree down and mill up the wood for us? None of those portable things really kind of came to fruition for a lot of reasons. So I figure if I buy a new one in the future, it doesn't need to be mobile. I just need to build a lean-to for it, put it under that, and then I can have it out of the elements, and I can mill the exact kind of lumber that I need and not worry about anything else. So sawmill is gone. I absolutely love it. I'm going to miss it. I'm sure it's going to be one of those things where now that it's gone, I'm going to think about it all the time and wish that I was milling logs, but that's okay. It found a good home, so all good there. I do want to thank everybody who participated in the surveys that I put on the Discord server. I'm going to keep posting those periodically, just to kind of get a gauge for where everybody's at, what's important to you guys, and make sure that I'm delivering content that's relevant, applicable, current, all that good stuff. Oh, and I do apologize. One of the surveys I had mentioned how many episodes you would like to see per month, and I kind of jokingly threw one in there that said like more than 20. One person actually voted for that, so I do want to apologize to you. While I'm certainly not going to rule that out, because, you know, anything is possible, that's going to be a bit of a stretch for me. I think I can probably pull off, you know, maybe best case scenario, 2 a week with a B buzz. So maybe 3 times 4, maybe 12 on the really, really high end. Maybe if we get this massive influx of people and all of a sudden, you know, I'm, you know, number 2 right behind Joe Rogan or something like that. You know, maybe we'll figure something else out, but I wouldn't hold your breath on the 20. So sorry about that. Real quick, I do want to do a episode update. So we just got episode 54 out there. And that's going to be the splitting 201 episode. Episode 53, right before that, was a kind of a revisiting of some terminology. I recognized there were some things I didn't cover early on. And I just kind of did episode 53 to go back and just talk about all the different words and terminology around beekeeping. As soon as I finished recording, I thought of some more, but that's all right. We'll figure that out later. So episode 54, splitting, is just released. Episode 55 is coming out next. And that's going to be an episode on, I'm not 100% right now if it's going to be 55 or 56, but one of them is going to be queens, like all the different methods you can use for queen rearing. The other one is going to be about hive placement. And I'm a little disappointed in myself. I went back and what I've been doing is cleaning up the episodes, all of them. And I think I'm right around episode 10 right now. And I got to apologize to everybody because some of the audio on those first episodes was absolutely atrocious. So thank you for sticking with me and staying in the game here, because I just went back and I'm playing these and it was terrible. Anyway, in episode 7, it was actually called, you know, hive placement and installation. And as I was listening to everything in there, I think I remember hearing me say something like, oh, you know, generally I have better luck when my hives are facing south or southeast, you know, kind of somewhere in that direction. I don't think I said a whole lot more than that. I don't think I really covered that very well at all. So I'm going to do an entire episode. And like I said, I'm just not sure if it's going to be 55 or 56. I got to work that out still. But it's going to be an entire episode talking about where around your home, your yard, your property, near your neighbors. Because I think what I ended up doing is probably talking about it in bits and pieces somewhere else. I don't know. But either way, we're just going to go ahead and cover it in a complete episode. I know there's some places where people have discussed having ordinances where they live where you must put a certain kind of fence around it or like a barrier kind of almost. You know, we have a lot of questions around, should it be in the shade? Should it be in the sun? So we're going to dive in and we're going to cover all of that in the next couple of episodes here. I was down at the property the other day doing some work, and I had to get a trailer inspected. So it's a big 20-foot, 25-foot deck-over trailer that I use to move equipment. I had to take it for its annual state inspection, and it was only like 7 or 8 months overdue. And on the way back, I got stuck behind a piece of farm equipment. When I say farm equipment, I don't mean like a little tractor that I can just kind of go around. I mean, whatever this was literally the width of the entire road. So this is a 2-lane road, you know, 1 lane in each direction. And this thing took up the entire road. I think, you know, the instinct somebody has is to be kind of frustrated and irritated because they're stuck behind this thing. But I kind of took advantage of the opportunity to look around and enjoy the countryside. There were so many just different flowers and things that were blooming, and everybody was out plowing their fields and getting all the spring planting done. And it was kind of nice to just drive slow a little bit and just see, kind of see what was going around. The things that, because those being a little bit narrower country roads and pulling a big trailer, I'm usually head down, you know, focusing on the road. So it was kind of nice to look around a little bit and see what was going on in the community. So next thing I have for you here, we are getting really close over there on YouTube. If you've checked out the YouTube channel, like I said, so I know for the record here, I am definitely not going to be in the top like 4 or 5 million in content creators here. This is one of my big pushes over the next year, is to really put together like a semi-studio type of thing and a recording area and really do a better job on the video side of things. I know that I'm failing you there, but we're really close to monetization over there. We only need 2,923 more hours of viewing time to be monetized. So I'm thinking to myself, like, you know, if we get about 4,000 or 5,000 downloads a week, I just need half the people who listen to the podcast to listen for about, or watch about 2 minutes worth of videos. So if you guys can help me out with that, I'd really appreciate that one. All right, so all the fun and joking aside and getting down to the nitty-gritty here, let's dive into a little bit what's going on in the Discord room here lately. I did kind of mention already, you know, the hot topic, a lot of discussions lately about splitting. So I think we covered that hopefully in episode 54, but, you know, we'll keep my eyes open there. And if anybody has any more questions, we'll kind of dive back into it. Because there's been some really neat discussions around understanding the dynamics of splitting and the pros and the cons. And the one thing that I kind of got a little bit, I don't want to say bent out of shape, but kind of irritated on as it relates to splitting is I think that everybody who puts out content around things they're doing as beekeepers, like they're not doing anything at any point in time, myself included, to mislead somebody down a certain path that is not accurate technically for where they are. You know, we speak quite often in generic terms and how things are where we are. Like I know, for example, where I am, it's actually really, really different keeping bees here than it is just 20 minutes down the road. I can go to one of the neighboring communities of Chesapeake or Suffolk or any number of communities that are out there west of Suffolk, like Windsor, and there's a few other towns. I mean, I don't have to go very far at all where beekeeping is a completely different experience. Even here where I am in Virginia Beach, I can go down to the southeastern part of Virginia Beach called Pungo, and beekeeping down there is completely different from what it is up here where I am. That's where I kind of got a little bit bent out of shape with some of the splitting techniques that were advised, not because they were wrong, but because there's a lot of precautionary things that you need to understand and need to be considering when you're doing them in your area. Okay, another question that has come up is some clarification on pollen patties. And I think you've probably heard some mixed things from me about them. But one of the recent questions was, hey, are they good or not? And so I'll tell you my experience with them and why I've kind of steered away from them a little bit over the years. So the very first time that I remember using them, I had heard somebody talk about them and I thought, hey, that sounds kind of interesting. So it was the springtime and I threw some on and I just kind of left them there. They were at the top of the hive underneath the inner cover and I left them alone and just kind of did my thing. And within a couple of weeks, they weren't eating it at all. It was really hot and mushy. It was dripping down into the hive. And it was just such a mess that was the first turnoff. So then I didn't use them anymore. I was like, okay, this is ridiculous. They're not even eating it. And then again, you hear people talking about how they're using pollen patties with success. And I thought, well, man, let me try it again. And I put them on again and did the same thing. I left them on for a long time. And then when I went to them the next time, the hive beetles had gotten in there and they had laid hive beetle eggs in there, and now we had all these hive beetle larvae crawling all around, and of course it's at the top of the frames, so they're actually kind of able to fall down and get into the brood chamber and into the areas of the hive that I really don't want them. So again, I pulled them off and I just wasn't super pleased about them. The one time that I maybe should have tried it, as long as I had the hive beetles under control, might have been in the summertime during that period of dearth that I typically have. And I didn't do that then. I typically do sugar syrup at that time of year. But where I did have success with them the first time that I tried this is, you know, people used to talk about what you would do to overwinter. And they would say, oh, well, I use fondant or I use candy boards or, you know, just a big pile of granulated sugar in a box and they throw in there. And everybody has kind of different things they do for providing some feed for overwinter. And my thought was, if I use a pollen patty, it's got to be somewhere where they can take advantage of it. If they're in the cluster and they're moving through the stored honey, and I have this pollen patty at the very top, well, they're probably not going to just break the cluster to go up there and get whatever's in the pollen patty to come back down and bring it back for everybody. But my thought was, if they have enough honey, they don't need the pollen patty anyway. And if they run out as they're working their way up in the hive anyway, they'll get to the pollen patty if I have it up top. And the first season that I used them like that and I put them on top, I think I put at least one or two. I mean, I had one and maybe cut it in half. So I think it was just one pollen patty cut in half right in the middle above the top of the where the honey would be stored. And in the spring, they had eaten about 3/4 of it because what happened was it was the more pollen-dense patty because I think they have where you break them up into like pollen heavy or carb heavy or balanced. And this was kind of a pollen heavy, protein heavy patty. And they went nuts on it at the late winter. And then I used them again right away with a couple colonies in the spring. And that was where I really noticed that it made a difference, because it was still too cool quite often for them to get out and forage. And this was helping them to get a little bit of a boost in the spring and get ramped up with some new brood. So my opinion kind of changed on them a little bit after I had done that. But outside of that, like I said, because of my experience with the hive beetle, I'm really kind of cautious about using them the rest of the year, but I'm opening up a little bit more to it. So are they good or not? I would say they are good. Definitely pay attention to how you're using them. Watch out for the hive beetle larva and all that kind of funkiness. There is a guy in our Discord room who has posted a few pictures of them, and it's like a feeding trough. It's pretty cool, that the pics that he's posted. So feel free to join us over there in the Discord room. It's just Beekeeping for Newbies, newbees.com. There's a link about halfway down on the left, and you can join us over there in the Discord room, though. He can show you his bee feeding trough.
As most of you know, I'm a big fan of the outdoors, and most of my time is dedicated to beekeeping and gardening-related discussions. But you probably did not know that one of my responsibilities as a kid was caring for our houseplants. Yes, part of my $5 a week allowance went towards making sure all of the houseplants were healthy and happy. We used to have shamrocks, Christmas cactus, philodendron, and more. Which leads us to today's podcast sponsor, and a special thanks to Palm Street. Palm Street is the best live shopping app for the plant lover community. You can buy and sell rare plants, crystals, ceramics, and other unique goods. Connect with trusted plant sellers and nurseries that sell nationwide. Shop 24/7 and with live human customer support. What I love most about Palm Street is joining a live stream where sellers walk through all the details and characteristics of the plants they're offering. You can get live answers to your questions and see what questions others have asked as well. It's such a great way to engage for buyers and sellers. And as a special offer, new users will receive $5 app credit, 10% off their first order, and up to $6 off shipping for 3 orders. Palm Street, available on Google Play or the App Store.
When I was little, my grandmother had bird feeders and a bird bath in her backyard. Some of my favorite memories growing up were listening to her tell me everything she knew about the feathered friends that visited her yard daily. How amazing would it have been for us to be able to capture images and videos of that experience and to be able to share them with others? Well, if you're ready to take your backyard bird watching to the next level, FeatherSnap makes Wi-Fi-enabled smart bird feeders that blend the best of technology and nature. Get a high-def glimpse of your feathered friends with a top-of-the-line camera so every visitor can be seen with clarity and detail. A unique dual-feeder bin helps attract more species, and built-in solar panels keep your camera's battery going strong. FeatherSnap's mobile app creates a truly immersive experience, allowing you to collect and organize your favorite pics and videos and earn badges along the way. Best of all, FeatherSnap offers expert-trained AI identification of more than 275 North American species thanks to their in-house ornithologist. Check them out today at FeathersnapCam.com. That's FeathersnapCam.com.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs. All in the Kroger app. Get 3 for $10 on select Kellogg's Giant Size cereal with your card. Then get tender USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast for $4.99 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, the next thing I noticed, this is just something I came across. I was just scanning around on YouTube, and I saw a title of a video, and a full disclosure, I did not watch the video, but the video title was, Make Thousands of Dollars as a Beekeeper. I immediately thought of a business reference I heard, that if you wanted to make $1 million in the restaurant industry, start with $3 million. It was almost the same kind of thing that I thought about. If you want to make thousands of dollars as a beekeeper, you probably want to start with about tens of thousands of dollars. I've been beekeeping for a long time, and I know kind of where there are a lot of areas to make money in beekeeping. One of the real big challenges I see with it is everything is really heavy lifting. You know, everything is done up front. So you invest, let's say as an example, you start working in October, November, and you're assembling hive bodies, you're getting everything ready all winter long, where your hives are going to be placed, and you know how you want everything to be, and then you get your nukes and your packages, or maybe you're buying full colonies or whatever it is that you're doing, and you're doing all this work, and then after 5, 6, 8 months, 12 months, then you can start getting some money. So somebody might go to an apiary where someone sells 100 nukes in a day, and you're like, oh my God, this guy just made $20,000 today. And yeah, you know, they may have made $20,000 that day, but that may have been the only income they've had this calendar year. And it's the same kind of thing with honey. You do all that work to extract and bottle and produce the honey and get that sold. How many hours are you putting in to get all of that done? How many hours of on all ends of it, right? The beekeeping, the inspections, the movement of honey frames from point A to point B, the extraction, the bottling, the end user sale or the bulk sale, depending on what you're doing. So I think you can definitely make good money in beekeeping, but you absolutely have to have very realistic expectations about how quickly or how slowly that money will show up and how much you'll actually have in expenses. Because I think that when you do a lot of the math with the number of hours you have to put in, you know, you're probably making just a few dollars an hour. And you know, you get a lot of deductions. So that's great. I mean, there are definitely a lot of deductions. But if someone said to me, like, hey, what's the fastest path to earning, you know, $100,000 a year or something like that, I would say, man, watch some YouTube videos, learn how to do Python, JavaScript, React, MongoDB, or some other database or whatever it is. You can be programming and writing code from home, making six figures a year within, you know, within a year or two or maybe three or whatever it is. Beekeeping isn't going to be the easiest path to thousands of dollars, but the guy is technically accurate in his statement. You can make thousands of dollars in beekeeping, and you'll make that over the course of 10 days, and that'll be all you make for the whole year. Okay. Here's another question that I think came up maybe yesterday or the day before, and someone had said, hey, quick question. If I want to introduce a hive that is queenless to one that has a queen, I'm supposed to put newspaper in between the two of them when I join them. Is that right? Or can I just drop them together and everything is fine? So this is something that's really common to be done, particularly at the end of the season. So a lot of times, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more today, but a lot of times you may have nukes or other resource colonies that you're using to boost your production colonies. And then the end of the season, maybe you either combine them or you stack them or you put them into different configurations. Or sometimes you just kind of kill off the excess, less productive queens and just merge colonies together so that you have a much larger cluster and a bigger group of bees to hopefully overwinter. Other scenarios where you may have a queenless colony that you want to join to another one is, let's say, you know, I always recommend people when you're starting out in beekeeping to try to start with two colonies. That way you kind of have one to compare to the other. It is entirely possible that something weird could happen. Something could go wrong. And one of those colonies could become queenless. And, you know, maybe one of them swarmed, you didn't catch it, the virgin queen never came back, and now you have a regular hive with the queen and one colony that does not have one. You may be in a situation where it's just better for you and the colony at that time of year to just merge them together. So the idea behind this approach that they mentioned about the newspaper is you would basically take your colony that has the queen, and they would stay right where they are, and then you would remove the top and the inner cover, and then you put just a, you know, a couple of sheets of newspaper on top of that, and then you would bring in the hive bodies, ideally consolidated if possible, to maybe one, but if you have to do two, you do two, but you consolidate the other hive down and put that on top of this one with the newspaper separating them. And the idea behind it is that they can kind of chew through the newspaper and eventually make a hole, and by the time they all get through to each other, they kind of know who they are and everything's okay. I think that this stems from the idea that we know honeybees are protective of their colony. We know that they know the smell of their queen. We know they're protective of that queen. So we just think that any time, if you're with a different colony, bees are going to fight. They're just going to automatically have a fight because you're in this colony and you're in that colony and we're different. It's time to fight. A couple of things to point out here. We've talked quite a bit about the divided deeps before, where we have a deep where there's four frames on each side, and then we stack nukes on each side above that, nukes on both sides above that, right? So essentially you have four frames over four frames over four frames, two different colonies divided down the middle. But then on the top, we put a queen excluder and a medium honey super, and then another medium honey super. And bees from both colonies go up, they intermingle, they store honey together, and then they go back down into their colonies and they don't hurt anybody. They know their queen, they know her scent, and everything is fine. No bees from one of those are going over to the other side to attack the others, right? It is not uncommon at all for bees from one colony to be moved into bees from another colony. When package bees are made, when nukes are made, bees are moved around all the time. There are a couple of, I would say, best practices associated with it, but I've never used the newspaper method. I've never had a problem. The only thing that I do is I just use some smoke as I'm merging frames and merging components together. And literally, I've never even seen any aggression. I've never seen any behavior that made me think that something was wrong. You just integrate them together with a little bit of smoke, just like you're doing an inspection, and everything's fine. Now, if anybody has a different experience, by all means, shoot me an email, hit me up in the Discord. I'd love to hear, I don't want to give anybody any misinformation. But in the, 12 or 13 years that I've been doing this, I've never had that be an issue. The one recommendation I would have is when you have a queenless colony, they are hungry for that queen pheromone. They want that queen to be there. They want that leadership. If you know you're going to be combining them, I would just go ahead and give the smaller colony, the one that's being joined to the larger one, give them a day, maybe even two, just to be completely queenless to make sure that we know that they're ready for a new queen. And again, it's also important to recognize the difference between being queenless and hopelessly queenless. If they're queenless, but they've got eggs and young larvae in there, they're just going to make a queen cell, an emergency cell, and they're going to make their own queen. But if you make sure that they have nothing but either capped brood or no brood at all, they can't make a queen. It's hopeless for them. They are hopelessly queenless. That's kind of what you want to be going for in this scenario. But like I said, I puff a little bit of smoke, join them together, not really an issue for me. I wanted to make a comment. There's been a lot of discussion lately around swarm traps and catching swarms, and that's one of the coolest things in the world to me because, like you've heard me say before, my dad used to always say, free, it's my favorite four-letter word, but it is. I love getting free bees. And yes, you're rolling the dice with their temperament. You're rolling the dice with all of the traits of a good colony and a good queen. You're rolling the dice with disease and illness and varroa and other things that they could potentially bring into your colony, right? I mean, especially with drones. Drones will bounce from colony to colony. They will drift from colony to colony. But I wanted to make sure I mentioned that when you're catching these swarms, whether it's through a swarm trap or just going out and catching one out in the wild or however you acquire them, please try to be pretty aggressive with disease prevention and treatment. I would say either hit them with varroa treatment right away, because if you bring them in as a swarm, they don't have any brood yet. So there's nowhere for the varroa to hide because there's no eggs that are laid. There's no young larvae that they're trying to get into where they like to lay their eggs anyway. Treat them right away. That way you get a handle on that out of the gate. I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that because if you bring them in, you just assume that wherever they swarm from was safe and good. You could be setting yourself up for failure, especially if they came from a location that maybe they just came out of some hardware that they absconded from because it had foul brood or it had some other kind of issue in it. You really want to be careful and just pay attention. I would say probably 98% of the time it's never going to be an issue and you're going to have a cool swarm and you're going to have fun with them and bring some new genetics into your apiary or whatever you want to do. But just be very mindful that they could be coming from an environment that's not as clean and sanitary as yours. There was a statement that was made in the Discord room today that somebody had said, some of my bees look completely different from the other bees within the same colony. And they were kind of like, I can't remember what they said. It was kind of funny. But I just wanted to throw out there that as that queen is going on her mating flight, she's going to mate with a number of drones. So you're going to get a lot of actual genetic diversity just with her mating flight alone because the numbers are variable. I've seen some say as few as like 10 or 12 and as many as in their 30s, even low 40s. But I think it's safe to assume that probably 25 to 30 drones are going to mate with that queen before she comes back. So you're getting a little bit of genetic diversity. So it's entirely possible that if you have an area that has different types of honeybees, the drones that are out there could very well mate with that virgin queen. And you might see some differences in the bees that are in your colony as she's laying those eggs. So don't be too surprised. Another thing we want to talk about is what people refer to as... So this is actually something that I never referred to them this way. I just didn't think about it, but it certainly makes sense. But a resource hive. Now, I've always just looked at it as sort of that model of the self-sustaining kind of apiary where you have nukes that feed your production colonies, and you kind of have this circle between mating nukes, what we would call like resource nukes and production colonies. And you kind of go in this three-legged stool where they all kind of support each other in different ways. I love having a lot of nukes around because what you can do is you can effectively make a single production colony. When I say production, I'm talking about honey production. You can take a single production colony and basically have four queens working for you at the same time. So instead of getting 1,200, 1,500, maybe 2,000 new eggs a day, you might be getting 7,000, 8,000, 10,000 new eggs a day being laid to support that colony. Because as the nukes are laying frames of eggs and you have frames of brood that are about to emerge, you can dump these into your production colonies. So these resource hives are absolutely crucial for anybody who's trying to grow an apiary or a small bee yard. Well, I mean, or a big bee yard. I mean, that's what the professionals do. It's absolutely great. And that brings us to what I had mentioned to you earlier with those divided deeps, because you can be running nukes that are two or three, four stacked, whatever you want to do. And then when you go to overwinter them, you stick them together in that divided deep that I mentioned earlier. And then what they will do is they will form a single cluster in the very middle of that wall. So two entirely different colonies will cluster against each other on the middle wall to stay warm. So it's really cool. It's a really neat concept. But yeah, definitely recommend using those if you have the ability to do so. Something was brought up to me by direct message somebody in the Discord room. They brought up a valid point. So you hear me talking about the math all the time around if you did like a walkaway split or any kind of a split that forced the colony to make an emergency queen cell. And I've always said somewhere in that like 41, 42, 44 kind of days where you're not getting any new bees. And the point that they brought up was definitely a valid point. And that was, well, yeah, you don't have any new bees being laid, no new eggs being laid for new worker brood. But whatever was kind of there before that queen left or swarmed or was killed or whatever happened to her, you do still have whatever brood was already there. And that is true. If a colony is going to swarm, they will taper the queen. They don't want her eating and laying for a few days before they swarm. But there should, in fact, still be some larvae that was either about to be capped, recently capped, that will be born. So at that point, you're definitely going to get a few thousand bees that will be replaced before that 44-day period that I had repeatedly used in my math. Technically, you do absolutely get some more bees. I don't know how many frames you would get. It would depend on how many were in the colony to start with. But I think you could get as many as, 5 or 10,000 bees that might be born during that time frame. Is that going to be enough in the course of a month and a half during the peak flow to sustain the colony? That's probably where it gets back to some of the areas where I'm critical of the walkaway split. But I did want to make sure that I brought that up, that those numbers were off a little bit. And the next thing I've got here is someone had asked, have I built a watering station for honeybees? When I first started keeping bees, I remember putting a small pail of water near the hive, and I just changed it like every other day because we do have a lot of issues with mosquitoes. And I just thought, we'll dump it every other day. That way we don't have to worry about mosquitoes. And I never, not one time do I ever remember seeing a bee drink out of this nice, clean water station that I had set up. So I didn't even try again. I did a little bit of research and, several things I had looked at basically said they don't seem to like nice, pretty, clean water. So I thought, well, I'm not going to worry about it. As long as there's water in the area, they'll figure it out. I figure if the mosquitoes can figure it out, they can figure it out. But every morning there's dew on everything in the summertime. So they should be able to get enough water from wherever the dew drips and consolidates or wherever there's water sitting on a leaf on the ground after a rain or whatever. I moved into my house in 2016 and my next door neighbor knew that I had beehives and the bees were repeatedly flying into his pool. And a lot of them were dying. And he came over and said, look, man, I'm not trying to give you a hard time about your honeybees at all. I think they're great. But a lot of them are dying in my pool. And I said, yeah, it's to be expected. I mean, some of them are going to die. You're going to lose a couple hundred every day. It's just kind of par for the course. And he says, okay, well, I just wanted you to know. I mean, I'm not upset about it or anything, but I just don't want them to die. And I was like, no, I hear you. I said, there's just not much we can do. So the next day he comes over, he sees me outside and he comes over with like an old chlorine bucket for like pool chlorine tablets. He had cleaned it out, washed it out, and then he had taken a piece of wood that was the same diameter, roughly almost, as the inside diameter of this bucket. And he had drilled these holes that were probably about 3/8 of an inch in diameter all over this board. And he brings it to me full of water. He says, hey, look, I made this thing for your bees. And I thought this was really, really a nice gesture. It was a really cool thing that he did. But he brought it over and I said, hey, I appreciate that. That's really, really kind of you. Thank you for thinking of the bees. I said, but to be honest with you, they're probably never going to use it. I'll put it down there. I'll put it over near the hives and we'll see what happens. But I just don't want you to be offended if they don't use it, because they tend to not seem to want to use the nicest water that's available. And he was like, oh, okay. And sure enough, I put it out there. I changed the water every couple of days. I did see, I think after about 5 or 6 days, I saw 1 or 2 bees on it. And that was all I ever saw. But I posted a video on the YouTube channel. It's just like, you know, youtube.com, the @ beekeeping for newbies. There's a video in there. I think it's 47 seconds long. And that is how I water my bees. And it's basically an area that is about 20 feet from where the beehives are. And it just forms this little puddle and it's muddy and gross. And the bees will congregate all over that puddle and drink that muddy water. There's nothing that I have been able to do to create an environment for them where they like what I'm providing better than what they're finding in the muddy puddle. So the long story short, the quick takeaway on this is I wouldn't go to a whole lot of trouble to make a watering station for your bees. If you do figure something out that they like, by all means, please share it with everybody else so we can pass the information along. And also make sure that you're switching the water out regularly or you're doing something to prevent the mosquitoes from getting in there, because you know, you're just going to create a mosquito breeding ground. The last thing that I wanted to bring up today is I don't really look at the reviews that often. I mean, obviously I'm hoping that people have good things to say, but I just don't, they don't come to me like in a feed. So I generally don't seek them out, but I absolutely appreciate them. So thank you for everybody who leaves the feedback. If you have negative feedback, by all means, please reach out to me before leaving a review, if you wouldn't mind. That way I can hopefully try to make it better. But there was a comment that was made in a recent review that I just wanted to share. And it said, it was a nice review. Everything was fine. And then at the very end, it says, a little membership fee is nothing compared to the good advice. I just wanted to make sure that everybody knows that there is no membership fee associated with anything that I do or offer. There's no fee to be on the YouTube channel. There's no fee to be in the Discord room. There's no fee to email me. So if someone is contacting you via Discord or anywhere else and is pretending to be me, they're asking you for money, they're telling you there's a membership you need to pay or anything like that, that is definitely not me. I charge for nothing anywhere. You can make donations all you want, but you are not being charged for anything. So if you have been charged by somebody pretending to be me, please let me know about that, because I don't want anybody getting scammed and I want to make sure we can block these people and go after them and whatever else we got to do, because that's super, super not cool. But yeah, that kind of surprised me. A little membership fee is nothing compared to the good advice. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Who's collecting the money and where's my cut? All right, folks. Well, hey, I kind of went a lot longer than I expected to today, but we had a lot of things that have been discussed recently and I wanted to make sure that we were covering it all. And like I said, we got a couple of episodes teed up here. The next one will probably be out within the next 5 to 7 days. And then we'll hopefully have the other one right behind that. As always, feel free to join us over in the Discord room again and drop an email if you have a question, jeff@beekeepingfornewbies.com. Have a great day and wish you all the best of luck here as we go into May. And we will talk to you soon. Take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.